Trofimo 305.
It had the desired effect. We were able to get away from being pinned down in that area. And I set off back to the retreat point, point of repair, as I call it. And my men were dispersed all over the place, but I managed to get enough, quite a few of them, relatively few of them, to follow me. And we started climbing the side of Pagoda Hill when we came under horrendous machine gun fire. And we all threw ourselves on the ground and got into whatever shelter we could. And it was each man for himself to get out. And I waved them on and said, you go that way, you go this way. And we were fortunate. We were able to get out to the point de repair, but we sustained a few injuries. One of them was saw Aaron, this man that that spoke quite good English. He had a bullet right through his thigh here. And one of my jemadars saw Harry, carried him down to a river, and two others helped him, and they got him out because they knew the terrain much better than us, and they were able to get him out south of Papun. So we foregathered and we set off back. It had been a shattering experience for the Karens, quite a shattering experience for us, because here we were, two officers with untrained, well, very basically trained volunteers who are not used to this kind of warfare. It has shattered the men, you know, to the point that I thought they would all disappear. They didn't. They remained loyal, and we moved back to a point south of Papun. And it was decided then that this was a time to really have a go at the Japs, right, left, and center. And I was allocated. I was made into a sub-area commander. And I was sent to a place called Nankuki, which was just south of Papun. And it was between two main roads, one leading to Kadangti and one to Berlin. And it was an ideal place for ambushes. It was absolute. And I set up my HQ in the triangle. And the Japs were moving to and fro up and down this river. And one, we set about putting booby traps on the other side of the road, you know, stakes with, made like swords almost, so that you'd spike yourself on it. And we waited, and eventually we got word that there was a large group of Japanese coming down from Papun, and we set up an ambush on the slopes. The Japs came through, and the first lot I let through, and then when the main body was there, we opened up on them, and we killed, we found out later, some 90 Japs. Wounded an awful lot, but I sustained, I had one or two wounded Japs, because what we forgot about, of course, was that though I had some men posted well south, the group that went ahead, the first forward party, were able to get into a position where they could fire on us. That taught us another lesson, and we decided henceforth, when we withdrew, to do smaller ambushes, was in and out very quickly, go in, fire, kill one or two, and then get out. The purpose was to totally demoralize the Japs. We had them sitting on tender hooks, and we mined the roads, we blew up bridges, and over the next month, we really created havoc. It was like a shooting period, game period, and I think we got a bit cock-happy about it. But suddenly, we noticed that the Japs were changing their tactics. They weren't coming down the ropes. They were coming along in the, on both sides of the roads in the jungle, which made it very difficult. And we noticed they were spreading about. So I decided that we'd better move headquarters right into the jungle and build ourselves a new camp there. And we were in the process of doing that when we heard some gunfire going off down the track. And at the time, I had my gun boy, saw her and just myself in the camp, and we thought we'd better go and investigate. And as we walked down the track, we ran slap bang into some Japs. Harry was standing slightly in front of me, saw Harry, and he fired from the hip and knocked the first Jap down. I fired, and we both turned and ran like hell. And we rejoined our men, and we just there and then had to get everything together. We realized that the Japs were going to try and take us. So we moved right up Diabolical Mountain. And we were met halfway up by Arthur Tabili, township officer, who said that the Japs had received order that we had to be killed, cleared out of the area, and there was a price on my head, reward for getting me in, and so on. So we moved up, and I had no radio at the time, so all my communications with the others were by runners, which took anything for 2 or 3 days. And we got to the top of this hill when I received a message by a runner from Critchley saying that he was worried about the situation generally, and he wanted me to move back and come to his camp, HQ, to discuss future tactics, etc. So the area was festooned with Japs, so I split my men up into little groups, and I said, you know, it's catch as catch can, we've got to get out of this. And so we went off in small groups, and we all turned up, met up again about a few days later down at Critch's place, which was at a place called La Chocó. At this stage, I was fortunate enough, we had an airstrip, that we could bring in a Lysander. And I was badly in need of a break, and so were my men, so I dispersed my men for couple of weeks and said they were to go and rest, but they mustn't take their uniforms, obviously, in case they ran into Japs and things. We hid all the equipment, and I went out to Calcutta for two weeks holiday leave. I wanted to get out because I wanted various bits of equipment sorting out, and I wanted a camera. One of the things that I wanted to sort out was an utterly ridiculous situation. The Karens are about no more than 5'2", 5'4" high, with very small feet. And I kept asking for boots, size 6, 7, 8. And they would send me 8, 9, 10s, which 180 of us used to cut the toes off. But nonetheless, it wasn't satisfactory. And there were things like that, which were ridiculous. So I wanted to sort out all these things, which I was able to do while I was out in Calcutta. I then flew back, and we decided then. I'm just trying to remember, yes, we were then coming into the monsoon period, and it had been suggested that we'd be taken out for the monsoon period, but to a man, every British officer that was spread around the area said, no, we must stay with our men. And look after them and keep together, because we'll never get them back together. So we went virtually into training camps. And I had rather a little sad thing happen. When we attacked Pagoda Hill in Papun, there was a little puppy that one of my men picked up. And it was a lovely little, it looked rather like a beagle. And I adopted it, and it went everywhere with me. And it was nice to have something that one could touch and stroke. It was calming. It was almost to talk to, because I had no white men or anything. You know, you live day in, day out with natives. It does get lonely. And he developed, this little dog developed fits, and it was obviously I hadn't got the right medication to give him. And I sent him out on this plane while we still held this thing. And unfortunately, a soldier saw him and shot him. And it virtually broke my heart. You know, I was very upset about it. I'm sorry, it's a silly digressing point, but it's a human touch. We moved then further north, westish. And rumors were then coming through fast and furiously that vast numbers, and I'm talking in thousands, of Japs were moving down towards the Shuijin River. And crossing the river and then coming down various tracks. And I went to a place called Lachukou and Pulota and set up a base there with a view to observing their movements and waiting for instructions to start attacking them. But for the time being, because of the conditions, I was really to nurture my men, as it were, look after them. I even had to build a small hospital. They were going down with malaria and dysentery and Christ knows what, including myself. I had dysentery 3 times. And I'd no sooner got organized in the area when I received a message from a Major Milner, who had been way north, Mongoose North, and had based himself at a place on the Shuijin called Bilin, Bolo. And quite suddenly, the Japs started appearing on the west bank of the River Shuijin, and were trying to cross in vast numbers. And Major Milner, with Captain Bourne, had spread their men out as thinly as they could and entrenched, and were fighting, stopping these men from crossing, the Japs from stopping. And they were running out of ammunition, and they were too thinly spread out to cover the whole section of the river. So he sent me a SOS to come as quickly as possible and help him out. I dropped everything and got my men straight on, and we marched. And, you know, to get from A to B there, it takes sometimes 5 days, sometimes 3, in appalling conditions. But we got there as soon as we could. And we had a get-together, and it was decided that Milner and Bourne would hold the northern sector, and I would hold a section of about 2 miles or so long, possibly not quite that long, together with Captain Wolfe, who had been allocated to me, who took over the southern region, and we got entrenched. And it was really quite shattering, because the Japs would come at dawn, or sometimes just before dark, and they would come over in masses, and they would fire at us, of course. They would have so many people firing at us while the others were trying to get in. What they were doing, they were building rafts with bundles of bamboos, canes, putting one hand over and sort of drifting down the river. We blew those things out of the water in Krasnozarsk. And then it got to such a point that I think there must have been, we were told, about 3,000 the other side. Well, we was, you know, something like 400 men, probably 500 men spread down. The odds are a bit against us. And we called RAF in, and RAF were marvellous. They literally strafed the whole area, bombed, and were very, very effective, as we were able to prove later on. We went and saw some of the results of their bombing, and they hit Japanese encampments and so on. Well, this went on, and one day we heard about the Hiroshima, and we thought, well, that's it. But of course the Japs didn't know about all this. And so we went on fighting until well into end of August into September. And by then we had established an airstrip at Bolo, and there was a certain amount of toing and froing from Rangoon, and we managed to get hold of support at Army HQ, which was 12th Army, through a man called Kim Yadov, who was ADC to General Stopford. And he arranged, through his connections, for Japanese prisoners of war officers to be sent to us to help us, you know, to go into the areas where the Japs were coming to tell them about the fact that the war was ended and they must lay down their arms and retreat in an orderly manner and not attack and so on. So this went on for 2 or 3 weeks. And the odd Jap did manage to cross, and we had all sorts of incidents with those, and so we had to be continually patrolling around the area. And then one glorious day it all seemed to quieten down, and we all four gathered at Bolo. We had a tremendous final parade. I've got all the photographs. And an official photographer came in from, I think it's ME9 or whatever it is. And he took photographs of all the guerrillas and so on. And I was told, by the way, I forgot to tell you that while we were on the river, I was... Two nice things happened. I got a runner to say that I'd been awarded an immediate MC for my part in the Papun battle. And I was, a couple of weeks later, I was made a major in command of Mongoose South. So it was a nice preliminary to the last month or so. And eventually I paid off my men. They all got so many rupees per day of service. We had a final sports day, which was most enjoyable. And then the Lysander came in and took me out to Rangoon.
Can you explain these terms, Mongoose Green, Mongoose North, Mongoose South, in relation to Peacock Force?
Well, they were Peacock Force. That was the name of their own force. Their own individual force. Mongoose and all that was just the name. The overall name of the Force 136 operation throughout that area was Character. It was Operation Character. These were just names that were given. And within Character, there were other areas. There was Hyena, there was all sorts of. And we were South. And for some reason or other, they gave them names of animals. And we were. The southern section from Papua in the south was Mongoose, and there was Mongoose North and Mongoose South, and Colonel Critchley was commander-in-chief of the Mongoose area, and then there were other areas further up. You'd have to look in the history books.
But how does Peacock Force relate to all this then?
Peacock Force was merely a force that had operated rather like... rather like on the SAS principles, where they go in as a group. And they were, it was just a name given to their, because they had their own men. They didn't need to recruit men, but they did, in fact, because they were there to, they had the nucleus of a fighting force, let's put it, to which they then could attach the levies. But Peacock is merely a name of that group. I can't tell you too much about them. I didn't know an awful lot about them. They were three. There was Major Peacock, was the I think that was his name, and there was a Major Turrell and another major. I'm afraid all this time my memory's fading me.
But you weren't in Peacock Fox.
No, no,
you,
no.
You were in Mongoose.
I was attached to. I went in under in Mongoose with Critchley originally. I was to be attached to Peacock Force to help them with the, which I did, to help them with dropping zones and all that, because they hadn't been trained in all that sort of stuff, whereas I was. It was not just the fire zone thing. We had a thing called a Eureka, which was a special beam that you could, when the plane came within a certain range, you pressed certain buttons, and it emitted a beam that was picked up in the plane and helped it come over the dropping zone. We had the S-phone, which the larynx set, which you put on here, and when the plane was within about 5 miles, it was a radio phone. You could speak to the pilot and guide him in. Well, all that sort of stuff I was trained in, which Peacock Force weren't.